Welcome to Maven's Talk, the podcast where we spotlight the brilliant women driving change in San Antonio's nonprofit world. I'm Carrie Dyer, co-host of the podcast. Each episode, we dive into real conversations about leadership, purpose, challenges, and triumphs. Because behind every powerful mission is a woman with a story worth telling. This is Maven's Talk, where women lead and stories inspire. And now meet my co-host, the one and only Paige, an entrepreneurial Swiss Army knife with a heart for the community and a mind for strategy. Hi, Paige.
Hi, Carrie. Guess what?
What?
I'm going to announce your anthem.
Oh, great.
Yes. Carrie on the past podcast introduces me as the entrepreneurial Swiss Army knife. I'm like, yeah, that feels great. And then I'm like, and Carrie, you're, wait a minute.
I listened to one. I heard okay. The ChatGPT.
Yes.
Plain Jane.
I love it. I'm here for this. Let's
okay.
It
is. It is here. You ready? The Logic Whisperer.
Oh. Ooh. I like that.
You
I
are.
Like that.
You said, you're like, yeah, that's me.
Yeah.
I kind of wanted to be it, but you know, no, it's you, because it's cool.
From this point forward, I was the first to hear it.
You were.
Yeah, you're the first.
It's you.
From here on out.
It's you. You know. Okay, so now that I've introduced Carrie, I'm going to introduce our guest, Ashley Landers. She's the principal and CEO of Texas Creative. More than 20 years of experience, she has shaping brands for local, national, and global audiences. Ashley has built a reputation as a relentless problem solver and culture builder. She's passionate about helping brands solve complex challenges, deepen customer advocacy, and create remarkable experiences. Ashley's leadership inspires transformational business solutions and energizes teams to bring purpose-driven work to life. We'll talk with her about her journey in branding and leadership, what it takes to build loyalty beyond reason, and how she connects culture to revenue. Oh, let's dive in.
I'm really excited about this. My career started at the Richards Group, a huge advertising branding agency. And so I always say like that was my MBA in branding.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, and
nothing better.
And I told Carrie how you... I met you through my best friend, Annalise Bosques, another powerhouse female at Bromley.
That's right.
Was that right out of college for you?
It was right out. That
oh,
was my
okay.
First job. Mm-hmm.
And Annalise is amazing.
Yeah.
You all had a good time there, I know. All right, go back to the question.
Yeah. So, well, we're going to get there, but I want to start with how people know you, which is Texas Creative. So tell us about the path to leading Texas Creative. What were kind of some pivotal moments that shaped your leadership style?
Oh, well, you mentioned Bromley, so,
yeah.
You know, I have to start there. It's funny, I think a lot about, you know, particularly women in leadership, right? And I know that's, you know, a lot of what Maven Talk is all about, right? And I love that. That's what really made me so excited to be able to ask them. I was like, I don't know that I'm a quality enough interviewee, I'm all about this mission. So I think about how no female gets to the top of an org chart without standing on the shoulders of somebody else, right? And probably
yes.
A lot of somebody else's.
That's right.
And so I think about all of the incredible mentors, male and female, that I had throughout my career to kind of get me to where I am today. And I quote them all the time in my day-to-day. Like, they are like ingrained in me, in my DNA. So at Bromley, I got my... first job. It was called, back in the day, it was a temp to perm, which meant you weren't guaranteed to have the job. They were going to test you out.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of smart.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a great idea, unless you're that person.
Yeah.
Like, I don't live
really
here.
Have a job.
Yeah. I don't have a job guaranteed. I need to sign a lease. Like, these are things you deal with when you're young in your career. I mentioned to y'all offline that, like, my family's all, like, an 8-hour drive away because I'm from Arkansas. So this sort of journey of proving yourself out. And, but I hadn't even graduated college yet. I had like 3 more hours to have enough hours to graduate when they hired me on this thing. So I was commuting back and forth from San Marcos, and, I had the opportunity to work on incredible global brands like Nestle. Nestle, mm-hmm. Was the parent company of a lot of brands that I got to work on. At the time, Bromley was the largest U.S. Hispanic agency, in the United States. And so, just really incredible opportunities that were at my feet that put me in LA, meeting with, you know, these really brilliant marketers and working there. And then that transitioned to General Mills with other incredible brands, Cheerios, Yoplait, Totino's, like all, Green Giant, like these just remarkable brands to get to work on and cut your teeth on in packaged goods. And so I tried to really harness and just absorb and consume everything that I could from everyone, any chance I got to sit at a table with people that were much smarter than I was.
Can we point out that you are from Arkansas and Bromley, I mean, you speak fluent Spanish.
Yeah.
So I don't know. That doesn't add up, but I think it's amazing and so cool.
You know, it's funny. It is one of those things where I joke about. I was actually thinking about this. I'm like, oh, gosh, a podcast where people are just going to hear my voice and they're just going to hear this accent. And
I love it. You have a great voice.
It's funny because I think about how, you know, certain things really, particularly as a female in business, they can define you, perceptions that people might have.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Where people want to kind of create your narrative.
Yeah. All the time.
I'm sure we'll get into that in a little bit. I joke, so I'm like, here I was, this like white girl, super blonde hair, from this tiny town in Arkansas, and I'm at this Hispanic agency, and there's all this basically kind of an amalgamation of cultures and languages and things that are just this melting pot, which was incredible, but people never expected me to go from this southern accent to boom, like fluent Spanish. The background there, I have nobody in my family speaks Spanish. There's actually a funny story. My grandfather had this idea that I was going to be an interpreter.
Okay.
And he put me in third grade in like cultural classes after school with a woman that was from Peru in our tiny town. And I, you know, picked up a little bit of the tongue and then studied it in high school and then traveled. And I was an au pair in Spain the summer before college. And then in college, I really I wanted to study Spanish, and it was more through the lens of, and this is a big defining moment in my career, it was more through the lens of communicating with people that were different than you, and realizing that language can be an incredible barrier, or it can be an amazing gift to bring people together, and so...
I love that.
Was like, there's a lot more to it, but essentially, you know, that's kind of, it has been a big piece of why marketing and advertising... Because for me, it's more the anthropological route of like understanding human behavior and how creativity connects with that. So,
That's like one of my favorite things about marketing is the human behavior piece of it. Yeah. Like, not just like the females from 35 to 45, but like what drives you from seeing this to purchase. So,
So after Bromley, how long were you there? And then where did you go?
Gosh, I was at Bromley for 12 years, I think.
Oh my gosh. Uh-huh. I didn't realize it was that long.
Yeah.
And until they closed?
Until they closed.
Yeah.
I was there the entire time. And it's funny because, so Bromley was, by this time was like Ernest Bromley had 51% ownership and 49%. There's something in our industry called holding groups. Mm-hmm. And they're basically global groups that go and buy up agencies to build this greater kind of network. And so years before, like actually kind of right when I was hired, Ernest had made that decision to sell the 49% to Publicis Group out of Paris, France. And that's where Nestle came into the fold. And so that created opportunity to, like when I worked on General Mills, I ran teams out of Saatchi & Saatchi, New York. So I was basically the account lead, but I had a creative team and a planning team out of New York. And so I spent a lot of time in New York. So when Bromley was closing, Saatchi was like, hey, you know, do you want to come and work here?
Oh,
and people are like, why would you not?
Yeah.
But I love San Antonio.
Yeah.
I love a big yard and green grass. Yeah. And so I was like, concrete jungle, maybe a different time in my life.
Yeah.
But I liked traveling there and staying in hotels there and not like living 3 hours away and riding a train to commute to work every day.
That makes sense.
So, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so, and now you're downtown here in the Rand building, so you've got that big city feeling.
I know. It's funny because Bromley, when I started, was at the very end of Houston. And I went
there to meet on Elise for lunch all the time.
Which is a couple of blocks down from where we are right
now.
Yeah,
it is.
And I thought, like, what a full circle moment that I started my career there, and now I've moved my company here.
Right down the street.
Yeah. So it's just really a really incredible journey, what, 22 or so years later, here I am.
And then what, so then you start at Texas Creative. Did you purchase Texas Creative? Like, so how, what led you to lead Texas Creative now? Yeah.
So when Bromley was closing, I had just had my first child, and I, with my husband, who is in banking, and we sat down, and I was like, look, you know, you came here for my job, because we're both from Arkansas. You came here for my job. Our family's nowhere near. We're, you know, we've had our first child. I want it to be your choice if you want to move closer to home. And he was like, I absolutely love our church family here. I love my coworkers. You love what you do. And so let's just take some time. And maybe, you know, you get to be a mom for a few months, and then we'll figure out what's next. And I knew in my heart, like, I'm not made for a corporate job.
Yeah.
It's just not, like, there is something about agency culture and lifestyle that even in an in-house agency at a USAA or an HEB, you know, you can't repeat that culture. And so because I am a very casual person, I love, if you give me a rule, my goal is to break it. I feel like rules are made to be broken. So, like, I would get in a lot of HR trouble, I feel like.
Oh my gosh.
But Texas Creative, I literally was like, okay, I'm going to take these 3 months. And this was the weekend after, like, Bromley, you know, was finished up my role there. And I got a phone call. Actually, I got a LinkedIn message. And it was from the previous owners of Texas Creative. And they were like, everybody's telling me I need to talk to you. Because we have a role that we're looking to bring somebody in. Would you come? And in my mind, I was like, no, this is not really, like, I'm not ready. This is not what I'm looking for. But I haven't interviewed in 12 years.
Yeah.
So maybe I should just go and, like, talk to them and hone those skills.
Get ready. Yeah, those are definite skills.
So went into the interview, and they asked me to take the job that night. And it was, you know, pretty comparable move from where I was at, like, compensation wise and so I thought that would be kind of dumb not to, and then I'll figure out what's next. I still wasn't, like, fully, like, thinking I'm committed, but in that meeting the owners were like, look, we have kind of a 5-year timeline, and my two partners today, Josh Norman and Art Williams, were already there, and they were in that room, and I just had this feeling of, like, I really liked them.
I knew,
like, and I'm a big believer in trust your gut, like, there's somebody, something is putting that feeling there. So then boom, to speed this up, COVID happened, we went remote. I think the owners realized, like, we're so removed from the work, because Josh, Art, and I were already really kind of running the company, that they were like, it's time, we're ready to, you know, sell and move on, transition. And then this was a month before I had my third child, and I'm like, I'm going into maternity leave and negotiating the purchase of the company.
I love that.
Yeah, so the three of us bought the company, and that was about 3 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so I was VP of client services
okay.
before becoming CEO, and the CEO change happened in the transition of ownership too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that gets us to kind of leadership lessons as a CEO. What, and guiding through teams, like, what kind of important lessons have you learned along the way, and do you pass on to others about guiding teams through kind of mission-driven work? How do you guide people through that?
Oh my gosh, this is, like, my favorite thing to talk about. I'm like,
perfect.
So
you're in the right place.
Stop me. And actually, like, the listeners can't see, but I'm such a nerd.
You're very prepared.
I brought all these printouts and, like, these notes.
Makes me happy.
And I brought, actually, this book that for me was, like, a defining...
The Story of Purpose.
Yeah, it's, it I've
not read it. It's
a defining piece in my career. It's actually pretty old, but a lot of our philosophy and our kind of proprietary tools that we developed at Texas Creative are, a lot of them are based off this book.
All right. I'm going to read it now.
So, for me, mission-driven and purpose-driven, like I kind of will use those interchangeably, yep. but to me there's kind of a key difference in why I lean more into purpose than mission. Mission and vision, every organization has that. They feel like it's a must-do. They'll work to get words on a paper, they'll wordsmith,
yep.
and then they'll mm-hmm. throw it on a website and forget about it.
Yep.
And there's not a lot of action inside of the core of that statement. For me, purpose, there it's action is innate in that. And so we have a tool that we use. It's called Master Brand Strategy. And it can be organizations that are struggling that need to reframe who they are. It can be organizations that are, at a major transition point.
Yep.
It can be organizations that maybe have a number of different service lines or divisions or audiences, like they're, they are not one kind of simple product or thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's meant to be a model that can be very simple or for very complex challenged
right.
brands. And the idea behind it is that if you can get to the core of what an organization believes and why it exists, like that we talk about purpose being ideology and intent. And so mm-hmm. You break it down into those two pieces. And so we help brands and clients of ours go through this kind of, usually it's an all day exercise with all the key stakeholders. We get them in a room and it's very experiential. And
I love that.
And we help them get to that stage. Because what happens in marketing and advertising is people will come in and they'll say, I need help with this. Or make me this.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Can you do this brochure? Can you create? Can you do this email?
Yep.
So they're at way down at the other end of the sphere at execution,
yep.
And so we break ours into purpose,
mm-hmm.
brand DNA, pursuits, and actions. So we always say people come in at the action stage, but
yep.
they have no idea.
Back
it up, because if you have a clear purpose. And you let that drive everything. It permeates like not only the actions that you take from a business side of things, right, from growth or whatever you're trying to do, but for the financial wealth or health of your company. But it permeates like the people that you hire, the clients that you will accept. Like it basically creates a space where everybody is the same energy and is bought in to the mission
mm-hmm.
and the purpose, and they know how to act, they know how to talk. Like it drives literally everything. So to me, that is the most important thing that any organization can do, no matter how large or small.
Yeah.
No matter the size of the budget, because it doesn't take a lot of budget to do that kind of internal work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You should be doing that long before you're spending any outward money.
Right.
Long before.
Totally.
So that's kind of how we approach and our thoughts on that. It's like it's the most mission critical thing you could be doing.
That's amazing. I love that.
Yeah, I'm still absorbing it. I love it so much. I'm like, yes.
Kate is like, do my own personal brand.
Well, yeah, we've been talking about personal brand lately with this certification I got. I'll tell you about later.
Yeah.
Let's go into the next question.
No. Okay,
not
so
about
from
me.
Your bio, I actually love that you have this in your bio, is your Gallup strengths, which are futuristic and activator. How did these traits influence the way you help organizations move from vision to action?
I guess I'll go into the futuristic first, because I know with the way Gallup Strength Finders, whichever one comes out first is like your strongest one.
Okay.
That's the way I understand it, and futuristic was my first one. I think your greatest strength is also oftentimes your Achilles heel, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Oh, totally.
And so I am definitely the definition of futuristic in that area, but to a sense where sometimes I forget, like I move on so quickly from the past. Like I just don't look in the rearview. Like I am full steam ahead forward all the time.
Yep.
All my energy is in front of me. So I think that a lot of times, especially if it's an organization that's been around for a long time, they get lost in the way things used to be, or how it's always been done,
mm-hmm.
and so their vision is in the rear view versus out the front window.
Right.
So for me, I think that that's a really critical place. It's like understanding, and this goes back to purpose again, is let's take an organization that's 100 years old. The reason that they were founded or started 100 years ago, they had a core belief, and they had a reason for existing. And that is probably still the same today, 100 years later. But how they behave has to change because culture, community, context, everything around them is changing. And so I think that's the really critical piece, is that it's honoring your identity and understanding your purpose and the value that you bring, but couched in today. Mm-hmm. And so I know you guys, you know, a lot of your listeners are nonprofits or in the philanthropy space, and there are a lot of nonprofits here that have been around for a very long time. So that would be, you know, kind of my challenge, is to say, you've got to find a way to create that balance between kind of honoring your identity and understanding that, but understanding how it influences your future.
How do you, so, you know, one of the things that I think that you've keyed in on is the idea of like loyalty beyond reason. And so, speaking of nonprofits and kind of speaking of that loyalty or building that kind of history and that loyalty, what, how have you seen that kind of loyalty built in a nonprofit or in a community context? Is there like an example that you can use from a client of like how that plays out?
I'm going to give y'all something that is maybe a little polarizing.
Love it. Like, bring it on.
One of my favorite things, like, I want to work on, I love brands or challenges that are polarizing, because to me, that's like the ultimate creative opportunity as to how to bring people together that might have really diversified opinions. Because communication is the biggest challenge that holds people back, right? Like not listening, not hearing each other when maybe there's an area of alignment. So the one that comes to my mind is we won a contract with Bexar County that was for gun safety. And, you know, anytime you say the word gun, it's like, whoa, that's a, you can't say that word, right? It's like an incredibly polarizing word today. And this is not going to be political at all, but that's, it is, you know, something, there's a lot of sensitivities. There's lots of, you know, very strong point of views on both sides. And you talk about loyalty and loyalty beyond reason. This is a really good example of that. So when we first, went to commissioner's court and, shared kind of our vision for how we would go about this contract, because where it came from was University Health, which is the county hospital. Basically, they were like, we are seeing so many children that are harmed by guns, whether it's unintentional discharges or other, you know, very sad things. And so we need to do something about this. And so the county was like, we're going to set aside money. It's a public health issue. And so there were so many voices that came out from the community, like, why are you doing a, they wanted to label it a marketing campaign on this. This is not the right path to go. There are all these nonprofits and organizations that that our mission is gun violence or gun, you know, those kinds of things. And what we were able to do, this is kind of, we're in the third year into this now, but we came up with a campaign after a lot of research, going back to human behavior and like, another big thing of mine is like, don't be data rich, but insight poor. You've got to be able to translate the data into something of meaning, which again goes back to human behavior. So we were able to uncover through research from, you know, very diverse opinions that there, there was a common thread of protection. And that people's behaviors looked different on how they thought you could get to protection in the use of a gun. But everybody wanted protection, especially for children. And so we came up with this campaign called Bear Responsibly. And bear as in B-E-A-R, but bear as in our county, how you pronounce it. And then we did a kind of a nonprofit grant set aside. So we took funding from our contract and said, we are going to pass it through to all of these nonprofits that use, do this work. And so we brought nonprofits from both sides and points of view in together. They got on board, believed in this message, and worked to extend the outreach into their networks because they're the trusted resources in community, 100%, right? So that to me is how you think about loyalty beyond reason. That's a really good example of like, it didn't seem rational that if I told you I was going to go do that, you'd be like, there's no way.
Yeah.
But how an organizing idea, how creativity, and if you think about that, how it can really bring people together, I think that's a really big missed opportunity with nonprofits. I'm a big believer in coalitions, that a lot of them are doing similar work. How could they come together and make their power, you know, be multiplied?
Yes.
So, and I love those challenges. I think
you're giving me chills. I'm like, ooh, this is good stuff. I am, that's so impressive. That project sounds incredible. And that you were able to also fold in those people that wanted space at the table, and you were like, well, okay.
Yeah, in the beginning, they were like not on board with the idea of us. And then in the end, they are like, we're your partners. You know, we're all have the same seat at the table. So,
Let's talk about finding something in common. You just got to find that in common, like the thing that they all had in common. But you have to go deep for that because it starts. Because I mean,
okay, well, can we just can I just jump into this? I think this is like, I mean, what you're doing is an art, and the storytelling is an art, and that's why like theater and arts organizations are like so relevant and important. Like, we still like it, just it's everywhere, and it's that's a beautiful thing. Like, I feel like what you put together, that's a work of art.
I am a big believer in community art, theater art, anything the arts, media, entertainment, all of that. Like, they're that alone deserves its own coalition, you know.
Because the storytelling, like, it's a different perspective,
and
we all need to see other perspectives.
Okay, well, in today's landscape, what are the biggest branding challenges nonprofits face, and how should leaders be thinking differently about their strategy in 2025 and beyond?
I think you started getting into that.
I think biggest branding challenges today. I mean... not to repeat kind of the looking backwards, but to me, you have to ask yourself the question, is our future going to be bigger than our past?
Right.
And that, I think, is the, like,
such a good question.
That's the richest question. And if you think about it, it works across any, or it works across a boardroom, a startup, an any organization, large or small, it works across the city. You know, I think, like, if you go into every day with that kind of a mindset of, like, how am I going to make my future bigger than my past? To me, that's the greatest opportunity that any organization, nonprofits especially, can be. And I think that forces us to think differently about the way we've always done things. I think it's really easy to kind of rest on your laurels or go after sort of a rinse and repeat.
Yep.
And that's a big thing that I try to bring to Texas Creative. We have something, this is another tool that we use, it's called the one word. And so obviously in marketing advertising, like distill, right? We don't have a lot of time to say things. And so how can you say a lot in three words or less? And so we even challenged ourselves to say, how can we dial down, like, what is the lens with which everything that we do, what's our one word? And so we identified our one word as ambition. And you could probably go through and, like, even challenge and ask nonprofits or organizations, like, what is your one word? That's really hard work to get to that. Get everybody aligned to it. But when you do, it is transformational. So we came up with this one word. And
how long did it take to get to that one word?
I mean, probably like ultimately a day work session. But probably like a year leading up to it, not realizing that's where we were going, but like just working on the work and working on the organization. And that's my favorite thing in a CEO position that I try to do as much as possible is making sure that I've got the right leaders and talent in-house to do Texas Creative's work, and I do the work on Texas Creative.
Yes.
Right.
Now, 50% of my day is for sure client work and client-based, But I try really hard to protect the other 50%, and that it ebbs and flows, obviously, to focus on Texas Creative.
Yeah. So working on it and working in it.
Yep.
And you're balancing it. And that's, I mean, that's some good foresight.
I'm trying.
Well, and you, like you said, it ebbs and flows, I'm sure. Yeah. But having that, like, as a focus, that's a great point to be like, this is what I'm trying for. Yeah. I love it.
But I think that that one word, you know, has really helped and been that, it's like that accountability. Like, I go back to that. And what I've seen is, like, all of our employees, so we have 27 employees, and all of them have really embraced it in their own way. It's repeatable. Like, when you can really distill something down, it's not confusing to say who you are or what you're about. You know, it's like, it's that one thing. And how it takes shape and comes to life looks very different. And so, you know, ambition, why I'm drawn to that is because it's not an output. It's not a product, or it's not finite. Like, it's an energy. It's a vibe. It's something that you have to like come with 100% of the time. And I think people have been able to identify their own space in that and embrace it and contribute to it, like this living kind of organism. So maybe I don't know.
I love that. No, I love that you said that, a living organism. I think we, as Maven Collaborative, Carrie and I, you know, we're about, like, it's been about a year since we've, like, partnered together, and we've been on this, like, journey and had this, like, living organism that kind of shifts and changes. And I think we are on our way to that one word, but we definitely don't have that, like, one word yet. Yeah. But I feel really confident that we have been on this journey to get to that one word.
It is. It's a journey. And I think that, you know, you can never stop working on the work, in the work, like I said.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So good.
Okay, well, looking ahead, what excites you most about the intersection of branding, culture, because you talked a little bit about culture at the beginning, so I'm bringing that back, and purpose-driven work?
What excites me the most about the future?
Sounds like you're always in the future.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. You're like, everything, all the things, all the things.
Surely that was my first thought. It was like, all of that all the time. Yeah. You know, I think what I love about, and again, I'm relating this to my industry and my work, is that technology and innovation is always happening and always changing around us. And so this is not a space where you can, you know, just embrace the way you've always done it, like I said, because things are moving so fast and changing so fast that you've got to always be leaning forward. And so, you know, I think that culture is the most critical things. I'll quote my friend Lorenzo Gomez. I heard him say this just the other day, and I think he said that he, you know, got this from Graham Weston, but momentum is everything. And I feel like that has been really what has transformed Texas Creative. So we're 40 years old this year. We've been here for a long time.
Yeah.
But with the three of us, Art, Josh, and I, as new leadership over the past 3 years, you know, when we decided to buy the company, we said we have great talent. We have great legacy clients. Like, there's this foundation that's incredible, but the culture could really unlock sort of transformational growth.
Right.
And so that really was our first step, was like, again, let culture be sort of that seed that sprouts that momentum. Like, you can't have the momentum without a really strong culture in place. Yeah. And so, like, I am always excited about focusing on culture and seeing organizations that get on board and can do that. I think it's a really hard sell sometimes, unfortunately, because I think people are so caught up in the problem or the challenge that they have a hard time, again, going back to purpose, stepping back, seeing the forest for the trees. I talk a lot about this with my team. I'm like, you are looking at the tree right now, and I know the action is the tree, but what role does that tree play in the forest? Like, you've really got to kind of step back and see the broader vision of this, because everything you do has to go back to that purpose. It has to kind of ladder up to that. So, I mean, honestly, what I get excited about with the future of it is just any chance I get to work in it, you know? Like, any new business meeting where somebody comes in and they start talking about their challenges, I, like, I never rest. And again, going back to this ambition, like when we talk about that, we're like, ambition never rests. It's never satisfied. There's never a finish line for ambition.
Yeah.
And that, it's just maybe my personality. I could be a lot for people. I think I'm intense. But yeah, I mean, it's like that is kind of what is always driving me is like, oh my gosh, I hear that challenge and I want to peel back that onion and see the problem behind the problem and like start there, get deep down in the core of it.
Yeah, but
that's probably what attracts you to agency work, because you get to like have a new challenge and a new like and not that in corporate world you're not evolving, but like I feel like what I always loved about working at agencies was like, all right, well, I mean, and I did like elevators, you know, like ThyssenKrupp elevators with one of our clients, and it was like, and I did PR for elevators, and I got like deep in the weeds on elevators, which is a thing. But then another elevators. Was a wine court company they make, and so like, and I got deep in the weeds and like how wine breathes and all this. So like, but it was like fun for my brain to always be like figuring it out, and then like, I mean, when I think everyone in my family was sick of hearing about elevators, you know, but I was like, did you know this isn't a, you know, blah, blah, blah elevator. And that's why it's a little bit slower than these elevators. And there's a machine room at the top. And, but I think there's that like idea of like kind of getting to really get to the answer, like to get to the impact, you have to like, what you said, peel back the onion and get to the core and be like, what is the thing that like, if this excites me, how do I like let that permeate the rest rather than be focused on the deliverable? Because as a logic whisperer, I can be very, at times I get very focused on like, okay, the deliverable is here. Yep. Let's speed up through the process. But you have to do this part to be able to deliver a good deliverable.
You've already just proved out everything I'm saying, because you said logic whisperer. She heard it for the first time. She's embraced it. And now she's already.
She's living it. She's living it.
Like, you see the power of words and how they can help kind of create this narrative and tell your story. Like, I love words.
Yeah. Well, and going back to the mission-driven work, I feel like it's so hard sometimes for nonprofits, because it's like, hit your goals, bring in money. The programs need money. We've got to fundraise. But if you are not taking that time to unpeel the onion at some point and get deep down, it's going to affect you in the long run. And you could have something really beautiful if you take that time and go through a process like Texas Creative has.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like when we do this work, all in, it probably takes from like start to finish maybe a month. Like,
wow.
It's not, it doesn't, if you get buy-in at the senior level and you get everybody in a room together, like you can get there pretty quickly.
That is really quick.
And to me, it's like, I know when you're in your rhythm of the annual schedule and calendar, you got this event and this gala and this fundraiser, you know, like you have all these things and they're set and you are just going through the motions. At some point, you've got to kind of stop, and if you want to leave your future bigger than your past, if you don't,
there you go,
and you can continue doing the same thing and you're happy, that's great and that's okay, keep doing that, but if you feel drawn to do that, I think you have to pause sometimes and self-reflect.
Beautifully said.
Well, and you also work for, I mean, I'm going back a little bit, but you work for not just nonprofits. We focus on nonprofits because that's generally our audience, but I'm curious, just because I'm now just probing, how do you work with like for-profits? I mean, because in San Antonio, it feels like to be a legacy, like you said, your legacy clients, they have involvement in the community. So do you take a look at that and like, does that impact their culture? Do you like try, because San Antonio has such a involvement in the culture aspect to it. Do y'all peel back those, like how deep do you get with like the for-profit companies about their nonprofit involvement?
I have to check myself so I don't like share too much.
Yeah.
Because I am like an open book, and I just like, I want to talk about this. But I will say, Jefferson Bank is a client of ours. Been in the next year's their 80th anniversary, so been around a long time.
Yay.
Cavaliers, Texas Cavaliers, 100 years next year.
Yes.
100 years. Yeah. Okay, that's awesome.
So, like, these crazy, amazing brands that people know and probably don't realize, like, how long they've been part of the community. But Texas Cavaliers is a nonprofit, but the Jefferson Bank example, we did this exact same process with them, you know, when they were kind of at a transition period, when they were moving. You probably saw their rebrand stuff. That was us. Like, we helped them with all their look and feel, the logo and everything. But that came from going down this journey of purpose, and brand DNA and like understand. A lot of times what I try to help organizations see, like, and this is this, I could go down a rabbit hole with AI and get into all of that too, but you can get so caught up in the business and efficiency that you can get, that can be very short term because you got a lot of like metrics. There are short term metrics and accountability stuff that you're tied to that are hard numbers. And you have to remember that like nothing is more effective than creativity when you're thinking about a long term organization, right? And creativity in that. How you're identified, because I say all the time, brands are just like people. They have personalities. They act differently depending on who's in the room, where they're more comfortable versus where they're more polished and professional. Like, you have to create an identity and a DNA for a brand that knows that how to flex the same way, you know, any person would. So I mean, it actually is very similar in how we approach it. Depending on, it's really more or less nonprofit and for profit and more where the organization is on their journey.
How long
they've been around. Are they in like transition period? Are they trying to kind of accelerate growth, or is there a challenge they're trying to overcome? So, so it's very, very similar.
That's very cool. Okay. So wrapping it up, we always wrap up with rapid fire questions. So
they're very hard.
Very hard. You should get ready. Tea or coffee?
Oh, coffee.
All the way. Love that. Do you like just straight?
I'm like, I drink so much coffee. It's
you'll take whatever form it comes in.
But I'm a cappuccino girl.
Same.
And honestly, like Theory Coffee, like there's no better cappuccino in town. Oh. They're incredible.
Okay.
So much. Yeah. So
I'll be going now.
Yeah. Give it a shot. Know.
Sneakers or heels?
Barefoot? Is that
I'm so with you on that.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, I love shoes, and so I love both, depending. But, like, nothing's better than, like, barefoot on, like, good, cool, crisp grass outside.
And that's so good for you to ground into the earth. Should we go down that?
Shoes at all, it's like, spending money on shoes just seems like a waste.
Carrie.
I love it. I love it.
But so if it was appropriate to walk barefoot everywhere, I would, but it is not.
That feels logic whisperer to
me.
Yeah,
it is.
Like, there's some logic in
she would have said, Paige, don't buy those Veronica Beard new shoes at TJ Maxx or wherever I was.
And I would say, you must.
And I did. Thank you.
It's just another thing for me to think through. Does it match? Does it not match? It's just a lot of
it.
Okay, favorite meeting spot outside of the office?
Ooh, why do I instantly go to, like, having drinks?
Yeah, good.
Happy hour.
There should be.
I have to give a shout out because it's in the Rand building, but I love Double Standard.
I've been wanting to go.
We joke that it's because it's the suite. They're right below our.
Yeah.
Here,
okay.
And we joke we have a bar in our basement. So
you
want to come work here?
Like, yeah.
Come. Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome. I saw a sign that said Oysters, and I was like, okay, I will be going there. Yeah. It's on my to-do list.
What is your favorite sandwich?
Oh, without a doubt, Jersey Mike's. And do it Mike's way, but no onions, and add banana peppers.
Oh, so good. Okay, thank you for that precise answer.
Oh, gosh, actually.
Oh.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's going to be a hard, like, Bird Bakery, their chicken salad sandwich.
Oh,
my gosh. Yeah, okay, so that's tough.
Yeah,
it is, right? It's a hard
it's
a hard question.
Yeah, it is.
What is your favorite nonprofit event of the year?
Ooh. Oh, that's so tough. I'm going to say...
I can see you thinking. You're like going through all the galas you've probably been to.
Here's the funny thing. So this is longer than you want this rapid fire to be, but it's actually really helpful, I think, for nonprofits.
Let's talk about it.
Okay. So last year, because you're a part of WIFT, Women in Film and Television in Texas, and we had the first ever Celestial Awards, which is about like honoring women and legacy and that sort of thing. And Janet Holliday won an award and comes up on stage, and she was like, thank you for for this because it was a show. Like, people kept saying, oh, the gala. And we're like, it's not a gala. It's like the Emmys. It's a show. They're performances. Yes, it's theater arts. It's singing. It's all this stuff. It's bringing anything that's women in entertainment together. And she was like, you know, and I think about her and what she's done with her, you know, with this e-group. And I'm like, she said, the last thing that the city needs is another gala. And I that might be really controversial to say,
I'm with you.
I thought it was powerful. And because, again, that whole sort of rinse and repeat, and it's like, maybe you aren't in a position where you can drastically change, but like, get to the core of what do people value and love about your one event, your one fundraiser or gala.
Yes.
How might you, if it's they want to get dressed up and be around like-minded individuals that believe in a mission, and like entertainment's kind of at the core of that, how might you sprinkle a little bit of that into the event itself? So don't get me wrong, I love a gala because I love to get dressed up
but
and go.
But you have to choose between like two or three, or you know, especially like on a Friday night. Yeah.
When the weather's good. Yeah, so I mean, so anything to me that takes it to just elevates the experiential part of it, I think is really critical. So that's why I'm going to say the Celestial Awards. And
nice, brand new, too.
Brand new. Yeah. They've got, in January, they've changed. It's grown so much that it's going to be a summit at the Tobin Center.
Yeah.
And it's across 3 days. And it's bringing all of these leaders, major names in film and entertainment and production across the entire state of Texas. So they're putting San Antonio on a stage statewide where we're leading. I'm a big believer in, like, San Antonio's got to step into the spotlight. Like, we've got to show we are not in the shadow of Dallas, Houston, Austin, like, we have something really special. We're going to leave our future bigger than our past.
That's right.
Yes. Love that. All right.
Just end it right there. Just done.
Okay, sorry. Well,
okay,
one
fine.
Question.
Fine. One more question.
And this is reading or watching and what? It really bridges well.
Oh, man. So I am like a squirrel with books because I get so excited.
Me too.
So I'll read three chapters, and then somebody's like, oh, this book and this thing that interests me, and I'll go buy it, and then I walk away. I have a stack of like seven books on my nightstand.
I did too.
Which is like terrible. But I really...
I love
it. So that's more like kind of inspiration reading.
Yeah.
But on a vacation, like, I just want a book that's about like nothing but entertainment, and it's like my favorite thing.
We're the
same. But I definitely watch more than I watch more than I read, for sure. And it just really kind of depends. I don't watch a lot of TV. Because I just, I'm like, honestly, I'm so tired.
You have three children and you're a CEO. Yeah. And oh my gosh, the sports stuff. Whew, okay.
It's a big schedule.
Yeah, it is. You're doing it all. We're so glad to talk to you.
Yes, thank you for taking the time.
I mean, I knew you were smart, but I'm like, this girl is smart. People want to know her. This was a great podcast. Yeah. Thank you for recording with us.
Thank y'all for having me on. And I feel blessed to be considered in the company of everybody that I've already got on your podcast that I've heard, which, let's end on this. I heard that you arm wrestled Jenny Collins.
Oh my gosh, I said that.
So can we arm wrestle after this? I don't want to do it live where people can hear.
All right, let's do it.
I won't do it.
And then if you beat me, you can say, well, I can probably beat Jenny Carnes.
I'll take that challenge.
Let's do it.
Thank y'all so much.
Thanks.
Perfect. Okay, do you want to take your picture?